Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 11th of May, recording at 9:28 p.m. And this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's have a quick review of the week. Well, it's been a risk-off week, is the best way to describe it. We've had stock markets lower. We've even seen a bit of a crack in the ASEAN sector, and China, which had shown relative strength last month, has come off its lost a little bit of upside momentum following those gains. And best that can be said is that Wall Street shows some loss of downside momentum here this week, although not that. Although there's no evidence of any upward dynamic to indicate that an important rally is commencing. Elsewhere, let's see, we've seen European stock markets, they've been hard hit. They've led pretty well all the way down, although they're a little bit steadier here today for the most part. Elsewhere, the Americas, again, they've been in retreat. As well, the South and Central American stock markets, upside failure by Mexico. Now, long-dated government bond prices against that background have been quite firm. That means yields are lower, and that was the case again today. U.S. 30-year Treasury bond future is up at 145.03 as I speak, as well. That's after hours trading. Now let's first see U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar has been steady in here overall, so all of this is in line with that risk-off mentality and or environment. And the dollar index, not up a whole lot, but it's at 80.28 as I speak. The euro slipped to 129.21. Sterling at 161.74. And the Aussie testing that parity level. The Brazilian real and the Indian rupee, they've been soft among currencies still for a while now. And what else to mention here? Gold broke to the downside here, as have all the precious metals. And gold trading right now at 1580, excuse me. Silver down to 2884. Palladium just above 600. Platinum's down to 1464. Industrial metals are also weaker this week. Copper down to 1363. A few of them steadied slightly here today, but not much. Grains and beans mostly weak. Soybeans had a bit of a bounce yesterday. They'd been the upside outperformer before peaking with a key day reversal not all that long ago. And they got walloped here today, down over 49 cents. So, and again, to see energy, last but not least, a crucially important sector. Natural gas has been steady, up nearly to 250. And crude has been lower. We've got the WTI crude here today trading at 95.64. That's down 144. And the Brent has been testing the $112 level. Okay, so what's going on here overall? All right, well, stock markets most obviously remain in a corrective phase. We've been looking for this really since the end of March for the major stock markets, and the European stock markets being the focal point of global concerns. had been leading the way really since the end of February, leading the way to the downside, I should add. And the last 2 weeks, we've seen quite a pickup in some of the selling pressures overall. Now, this is creating some short-term oversold conditions, but, and the but is very important here, there is absolutely no other sign that this is that this is yet over. In other words, we need some clear upward dynamics just to indicate a short covering rally, and we have not seen those yet, not for any of these stock markets. And interestingly, today, for instance, the Nasdaq, which has so often led to the upside, it was leading to the upside in the early afternoon here today. But then the Apple share price, which peaked last month following that accelerated advance, really was well, Apple reversed its gains, closed with a small decline overall. I think it was $3 or $4, but that pulled the Nasdaq back down towards the lows of the day. So pretty soft overall. Where there is performance, it tends to be very much in the defensive, high-yielding shares, and that's a very important theme. Dividend aristocrats are showing a lot of relative strength overall. You would not know that there was a correction taking place for many of those. A number of the autonomies that we have liked for quite some time, but were concerned about when they became overextended relative to the rising 200-day MAs, moving averages, those have autonomies have pulled back in a number of instances back to levels close to those MAs that represent potential support. But you don't know whether they're really getting support there until the overall corrective process is over. Now, I had been hoping that we would go on getting a rotational consolidation, reaction and consolidation, and avoid a severe or sharp risk-off phase. And that had been the case up until 2 weeks ago, but as I say, the selling pressure has picked up somewhat, and there's an awful lot of nervousness out there that you can sense in the markets. I mean, I don't need to review all the factors; they've been in the headlines all too often. But these elections that have taken place, the fact that Greece is unable to form any form of coalition government, is going to have another election. The fact that that the risk of spreading civil unrest in the Eurozone and the rejection of governments in office, and the prospect of seeing a number of new parties emerging very often from either the hard left or the hard right, and the prospect of getting ineffective multi-party coalition governments that are incapable of doing much of anything, is obviously a concern here. So, where does it all go? Well, although we have a short-term oversold condition, until we see a catalyst, I have to assume that the overall corrective process can actually go further here. Now, what might provide the catalyst for a decent rally? Well, it's usually an event. Sometimes it can just occur because markets are too oversold, and you get a bear squeeze and a sharp bout of short covering. Those rallies can be quite sharp, but they tend not to last very long. What is another possibility is that we get an additional round of QE, quantitative easing. Now, the Fed is dearly hoping, as I've said on a number of occasions, dearly hoping to avoid that, because having to launch a QE3, of course they never call it a quantitative easing, but another bout of stimulus by the Fed would be at least partial admission of defeat in that the earlier programs were not working all that well. But with the unemployment figures still high and with the economic data showing some slowing activity, I think there may well be increasing pressure on the Fed to actually do that, but perhaps not for a while. In other words, we're likely to see this move further through spring and into the imminent summer months. They're at least well into June, it would be my guess, before anything like that happened. But the Fed may not signal any move if it does decide to move. So that would be one factor. Also, the ECB, since Euroland is the main focal point of global concerns, the ECB could come up with something. What might that be? Well, they've already produced €1 trillion to support the banks through the LTRO program. And 10 years from now, how many more trillion are they likely to produce? Well, that's a guessing game, of course, but think four or five, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's close to the mark. Having embarked on this path, we're certainly going to see more of that of the ECB's version of quantitative easing here. And I think that's all but inevitable. Okay, so how to actually play it overall? Well, I think that as selling pressure is gaining pace, that's not a good time to be liquidating long positions. Our view here at Fuller Money, the time to be lightening positions is when markets are rallying strongly up above their rising 200-day moving averages. That's the time to lighten, particularly if those trends are actually accelerating above their 200-day moving averages, clearly becoming overextended. As I emphasized, that's the time to lighten, not when people are becoming increasingly nervous and there's heavy shorting going on in the market. And some chopping of long positions. That's the time to be nibbling, but the nibbling I would confine entirely to dividend aristocrat, high-yielding autonomy type of companies. Those are the ones that we've liked for the last many, many months, and those are the ones that have been most in form. Overall, and I think that will remain the case. And you and I, I've said this on so many occasions, but you and I can only deal with the reality that markets provide. If we're in a choppy, rangy, whipsaw type of environment, or if markets are under pressure, I think one does need to be in the stock market, or I feel that that's one of the better options available. First, I don't like bonds, although they certainly have yet to break yet. Incidentally, I've got a feature on relative performance on bonds in comment of the day here today, which may interest some of you. And so I don't like what's basically a negative yield. In other words, less than the rate of inflation. So, you buy U.S. 10-year treasuries at what a yield of 1.8, 1.7. They've got inflation of 2.5%. So you're subsidizing the government. The government would be very happy to borrow from you at that rate, but you're actually losing money in the process overall. So, where do we go? Well, gold is getting more interesting. I'll have more on that in a moment. But what I like most is the, as I say, the high yielding dividend aristocrats and the high yielding autonomies. And they're the they're the ones that have been in form, but also it's logical that they've been in form. And now that the more overextended ones are correcting or have corrected excesses to the upside, they become interesting once again. And I place the emphasis on dividends because in a rangy valuation contraction type of environment, well, you want to be paid for your participation in a stock market that or in stock markets that may not be providing any powerful trends for a while. But overall, there's growth occurring in far more countries than are in recession. Therefore, valuations in these shares are improving in line with corporate earnings and dividend increases, which continue. So this is by no means an environment for despair overall, and I do expect higher levels by year end. But I've said ever since the end of the first quarter here that we should be thinking in terms of a reasonably lengthy corrective process. The big guessing game concerns really how much of a pullback or which markets get sharp pullbacks. We've already seen that. That's mostly Europe, and although India hasn't fared very well either, and and some of the markets will just experience rather small ranging phases, the ASEAN group so far, and Wall Street's done reasonably well overall. And I wouldn't be surprised if China continued to show a relative performance as it began to show last week. Okay, what about these long-dated government bond prices? Well, I've partly covered it all overall, but people are still buying them because on total return indices. And again, I repeat my point that I've shown some of those total return indices over time periods, comparing the U.S. 10-year treasuries with the S&P and also with the U.S. dividend aristocrats over three different time periods. I find that data really extremely interesting, but it does not show it's not inflation adjusted. Overall, so bonds that have safe haven appeal, but are not providing a real return, are not something that I would wish to trust my money to overall. But this process can go on for a while longer. Here, and it's also helped by the quantitative easing that's taking place overall. Okay, moving on to precious metals, and we've really got to start with gold or concentrate mainly on gold. Gold, as I speak, it's slipped below the 1580, currently 1579 and 60 cents. Now, that's not that far away from the lows that we saw, what was it? I think it was in September and December, and when it got down into the lower $1,500 region. I had been hoping that gold was in a support building phase at a somewhat higher level, but it never managed to break the progression of lower rally highs within a relatively narrow range. But it did break to the downside, very much very much in need of an upward dynamic to check this slide overall. And again, it may well need a catalyst because precious metals are moving more in line with risk assets. They're not performing as a safe haven, and the dollar is a bit firmer, so that's adding to some of the pressure on precious metals. I'm just gonna have a little drink here and take the headset off for a moment. Sorry, I've got a scratchy throat and I don't want to be coughing too much into the mic. Okay, back again. Good thing I'm not an opera singer. Never make it beyond the opening lines of the first opening stanzas of the first aria. All right. Now, so precious metals moving down in line with the rest of so-called risk assets and the commodities in general. And this is really interesting because we're into the 13th month of a major corrective phase in commodities. If you look at the CCI index, that's a continuous commodity index in the library, which we often post. And I say 13 months ranging lower, albeit from a very high level that we had seen back in April of 2011. Now, there's good news and bad news about this, as there is with so many things in markets. First, the bad news is that we could not see a decline of that magnitude without some weakening in GDP growth. Now, you know about that aspect of it, and therefore, we have that concern for stock markets as well. Will there be enough growth for companies to be able to generate earnings? Well, the autonomies will do best in that story. But I'm going to stick here with this commodity story. There's obviously been some long liquidation. You know, it had been quite fashionable to have things, and particularly crude oil. And there's been a concerted effort to drive speculators away from crude oil, and I have plenty of sympathy with that because I've so often said that these commodities were never meant to be buy and hold investment assets. These commodity futures are really a hedging facility, primarily. And they have been dis prices have been dis distorted by speculation, as I've mentioned on innumerable occasions over the years, and particularly since we saw them blast higher in first half of 2008, helping to trigger the global recession. Okay, the good news is that we're getting a reset in terms of commodity price inflation. Now, crude oil hasn't fallen anywhere near as much as the CCI index, but it is heading in the right direction here right now, and I think the direction in which it's heading downwards is more in line with the overall fundamental background. So I'd be reasonably optimistic that we could see crude prices come down a bit lower here during the next few months, and hopefully not really start to pick up again until they do reach a lower level. What sort of lower levels am I looking for? Well, I'd certainly like to see WTI at least below the $90 level. I'd certainly like to see the Brent at least below the $100 level, and I think there's a very good chance that we will see that. Now, there's no ground for complacency here because any supply disruptions or revival of they're about to bomb Iran, unquote, those stories can drive people back into those oil contracts. But as I say, they're heading in the right direction at this time, and the more we see commodity price inflation easing, the easier it is for these growth economies, which have struggled over the last year with an inflation problem. It's the easier it is for them to relax monetary conditions a bit further to stimulate their economies. So that's what's going to play out over the next few months. And it's just a matter of how quickly the whole process works through. But it doesn't take too much imagination to see that while growth remains low, commodity prices come back down, inflation pressures are lower, you get more stimulus coming in, and then growth starts to pick up again. Now that growth is going to be pretty modest in Europe if we see any at all, but it could be acceptable in the USA, and it could be respectable in the growth economies. And they really are the main engine here right now. And that engine is not, I'm talking about the whole China-led Asian engine, and that's not firing on all cylinders at the moment. But I think we will see that pick up. But I repeat my point, it'll take a few months. What else to mention? Currencies. Now, we've had the euro break down against the US dollar. It hasn't run to the downside, but it has maintained that break below 130, and it's really got a break push back above the 130 level, 131, to indicate anything other than the fact that it is taking another step downwards against the US dollar right now. And I've already mentioned in my review that the US dollar is generally firm here. This is in line with the risk-off attitude overall. So we're likely to see a little bit more of this over the near term, but I don't think we're going to get any big dramatic move here in these commodity markets. I've written an answer to an email quite a bit on the euro here today. I won't try to repeat that here in this audio, but there's so much shooting from the hip commentary and uninformed commentary on the euro. One of the key things people often talking about the complete breakup of the euro. Well, let's take it one step at a time. There's a good chance that Greece will leave the euro at some point, sooner or later, within the next couple of years. But they'll almost certainly have to vote for it. Will that cause some sort of contagion that drags Portugal out and possibly Spain? Maybe. Maybe, but this may play out over a very long period. And as long as Germany wants to stay within the euro, and remember the euro is a political construct that was created by France and Germany, or the creation of the euro was led by France and Germany is by far the most powerful partner in here. So if you get Greece spinning out, that once the dust settled, that could easily lead to a rally in the euro. And there are powerful entities that want to see the euro survive and remain a viable reserve currency, and those are led by China. So I don't look for any kind of huge collapse in the euro. The main problem that we see among currencies is one of too much strength in some individual units. Right now, the yen, and Japan can ill afford the yen at this level, in my opinion. And you know my view on this, Mr. Shirakawa of the Bank of Japan, is really not on board with the government and Japan's export companies in wanting to see a softer yen to bolster export competitiveness and earnings. So that's really kiboshed the incipient recovery in the Japanese stock market, which was okay during the first quarter, but has been in steady retreat subsequently. And a weaker yen remains still a catalyst for us in terms of seeing a Japanese stock market recovery worthy of the name. And I think that's pretty much it, folks. So, have a great weekend. All the best.